Not bad, eh? What? But are you British? You from, wait, hold on, Wales, Manchester? What is it? Wales. Okay.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You are listening to Sapnin Podcast featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, the hot mess of the podcast. And I'm bringing sassy back, but also finding comfort in what you hate.
This week's guest is singer, songwriter, lyricist, bassist, TV presenter. Jesus Christ, what else has he done? Band looker after and all-round legend in our scene. The mighty Gabe Supporter of Midtown and Cobra Starship.
Woo! Viva la Cobra! I didn't think we'd ever get Gabe on the podcast, and not for any particular reason, but just the fact that he doesn't do interviews anymore. I haven't seen him do anything in quite a long time. I'm very ecstatic that he wanted to come and talk to us two idiots for this. I mean, what a generational pop culture figure in alternative music, with two different bands at two different times for completely opposite reasons. Midtown are regarded today as such a staple from that early 2000s emo punk scene of New Jersey. We had Frank Iero and Tucker Rule just talking about them on here not so long ago, really leaving an influence on a lot of people in music growing up. And that ends, he completely flips the switch with Cobra Starship, embracing neon clothing and pop hits to alternative kids like me in peak 2009, and then steps away from the stage altogether to start his tag music management group, working with younger artists and making this whole business a rearing success. This guy is a creative genius and damn knows how to write a hit, and I mean some hits.
Yes. I completely forgot about the song until after the podcast, but yes, he did the Snakes on a Plane soundtrack fucking movie title song. I completely forgot about that. What a fucking tune that was. But yeah, we get into everything with Gabe, early Midtown days to Cobra Starship to what he's up to now and why he's doing it and advice for people. And yeah, this was a super interesting conversation, which we enjoyed very, very much.
Yes, and what's really exciting is Midtown are doing stuff again. They had a reunion in 2022, did a loads of those MCR dates in the US due to a phone call from Mikey Way Direct, so we can all thank him for helping out with getting these back together. And because they've been doing shows, so many people have been bombarding their comments wanting them to do new music. So what they've done is they've done the ultimate joke, and they're releasing a new EP titled We're Too Old to Write New Songs, so here's some old songs we didn't write. Bunch of covers, brilliant name.
Genius idea, absolutely genius idea. Well done to all involved in that.
I'm so excited. That comes out May 26th. You can pre-order it now and go and check out some current covers they've released of Lagwagon and Pavement. And Cobra Starship even ended 2021 with two unreleased tracks to kind of say a final goodbye with everything completely from the band, and we're going to be getting into that in just a little bit, and just really talking about what's been going on behind the scenes, the legacy of his work, interacting in the rock and pop worlds, dealing with fame and how quickly that came along, some ridiculous stories from his early days, and we even get into the time Pete Wentz leaked his phone number on worldwide television and his crossover with Gossip Girl, because it's me. We had to bring that up.
If you enjoy this episode or any other of the episodes that we have released so far, there's fucking loads of them. Give us a follow at Sappening Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and the TikTok. Also, if you really, really, really enjoy this podcast and are thinking, how can I help these chaps out? Check out patreon.com/sappening. There's loads of stuff there. And you get to meet some fantastic, fantastic supportive humans in that group.
Yes, that's patreon.com/sappening. But without any further ado, this is Gabe Supporter on episode 228 of Sappening Podcast.
Sappening!
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sappening,
fellas.
Yes! This week's guest is vocalist, lyricist, bassist, former sometimes TV presenter.
Oh, yeah. I forgot I did all that
stuff. Yeah, you did, yeah. And frontman of two fucking amazing bands, Midtown and Cobra Starship. Ladies and gentlemen, Gabe Supporter, how are you?
Good. Good to meet you guys, man. Thank you for having me on.
No, pleasure. This is one we've always wanted to do, and I know you don't really do too many interviews and stuff these days, so I appreciate you taking the time. How's things just for you at the moment? What's life looking like in the Gabe household?
Oh, well, the Gabe household is a fucking madhouse. I have three boys, and all under six, and it's insane over there. And in the office, it's pretty insane too. I have my other children here in the office, and they're a little more well-behaved. They can clean their own tissues at least.
Well, you'd hope so. Otherwise, the office would be awful to go to work in, and you don't want to.
I don't want to deal with that in the office. Yeah. It's in my contract. I don't have to clean anyone's butt.
Yeah, that's always a good cause. But Gabe, to start, I mean, I really wanted to ask about your mindset over the last few years in particular, because it must have been a whirlwind of emotions. You haven't been an active on-stage musician since 2015, and then at the end of 2021, you put out these kind of the final nail in the coffin with Cobra Starship, putting out two unreleased tracks, and then out of nowhere, Midtown Get Back Together, play shows of My Chemical Romance, and you're mixing that in between all your business work. And just like, how has the thought process been for you with all that lately? Has it been going through a lot of emotions, a lot of feelings, and balancing everything these last few years?
Yeah, I mean, you actually caught me at a very fortuitous time, because I really literally was just doing a written interview on the announcement of where we just announced that we have a label partnership with Atlantic, which is where I was an artist. So I just got asked a series of these questions. I've been thinking about that a lot this morning already. So I'll have some good answers for you about my mental state. yeah, I guess like when, you know, I got to a point making music where, I mean, so many different things happen. You know, like one of the things that happened is I watched, this movie, Supermensch, story of this, famous manager called Shep Gordon, who is directed by Mike Myers, who played Austin Powers. They met on the set of that one because he managed Alice Cooper. Alice Cooper's in the movie. Anyway, so he's talking in the movie about managing artists, and then he moved on from managing artists. He actually invented the idea of the celebrity chef. And in the movie, he talks about how he loves dinner parties, because when you do a dinner party, you buy some food, you cook it, you serve it, people eat it, they go home, it's over. You know, when you're an artist, it's like, and you're managing a band, it's like, okay, they write some songs, you put them in the studio, you go on tour, you write some more songs, go back in the studio, put another album, go back on tour. Like, you don't know when it's over, right? And that was just like, when the fuck do you get off this thing? You know, and I'm sure for you too, Sean, you know, I'm sure you probably felt that too. It's like, well, what point do I start my podcast? You know? but so I think that was like kind of the impetus, of me, you know, I felt like I spent almost half my life on the road. I got to do everything I wanted to do. I felt like very blessed. And I think that once you accomplish a lot of things, your mind either goes into two mentalities, right? You either go to the place of like, okay, I accomplished these things. I got to this place on the mountain. This is my fucking spot. Like, no one else better take it from me. And I got to make sure I'm always producing and doing stuff so that, you know, I'm at the top of the mountain and this is mine, right? And I think I just come a little bit more from the mentality of like, there's just like, I think it's also like a little bit of a punk rock DIY mentality. It's like, it's a tradition, you know? It's like you get to like run with the baton for a minute, then you got to pass it. You know, you don't get to hold it forever, right? And like most of my favorite bands, you know, broke up, disappeared, faded away. And what was important about them was not that they lived forever, but the moments that they had, you know? And I think that that's really like, what's special about music is we're doing everything we do is like, we do it for moments, right? So like when you ask about like my mindset, I have to like stop and think about it, because like I have my head down doing the things I need to do. And then once in a while, I got to look up and evaluate it and like take kind of like a census of like where I am, you know, like an audit, let us say, of like where I am, what I'm doing, where things are at. So yeah. So I think I kind of wanted to just, pass the baton in a way. I wanted to work with other artists. Even when I was an artist, I remember when I was like 20, I managed Armor for Sleep and like help them get started. And like, yeah, people don't know that. And like, I always wow. love that. I love that part of music, of like helping other artists, being passionate. I'm like, I'm a guy like, you know, maybe to a fault. Like, I love the early stages and stuff. I love getting my hands dirty. I love to build things, you know? Once the thing is like moving and it's working, like, I kind of get bored, which is actually like a really bad thing if you want to have a long career, you know? So I actually like, that was, the, you know, that was the talk. When I started Cobra Starship, my manager had talked to me, like, Gabe, like, I've seen in your career, you're like, you're kind of like, are in some ways like early on things. And if you just stick with it for like 5 years and just don't like move on to the next thing, like, you'll be successful doing it. And that's kind of what I did with Cobras. I was like, I had this idea about, you know, electronic music and rock being loud and colorful. I mean, you know, you have to remember, like, this was the time when My Chem was the biggest thing in the world. Everything was black, dark, depressing. And like our counter to that, like our counter narrative, which I thought in a way was like kind of punk rock. It's like, okay, everyone's black and dark. Like, to me, it's punk rock to be like loud and obnoxious, right? You know? And like, that was kind of our idea of Cobras, and we stuck with it and it worked. So, you know, just sticking with something, I think has a lot of value. And I try to do it, but at the same time, I'm always like, I like being early. I like working with artists. I like developing things. And so, I knew I'd get back there some point. I felt like that was the right point in my life after, you know, I had a couple hits. I was like, cool, this is amazing. I'm still young enough that I can start something new. And so I did.
Hmm.
That doesn't answer your question about why I did the Cobras and Midtown stuff, but that was like the general mindset. I can talk about that too if you want. I just don't want to talk forever if you want.
No, but that this is, we love hearing what your thought process is going through it with these things. And with what you've just said, I mean, it must be realization for you betting on yourself when you're at the height of Cobra and then all of a sudden you're like, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to start looking after different bands, and you wanting to move on to other things. Is that something with these moments that you've been quite proud to be like, you know, when it's time to fold them and when it's time to hang on to stuff?
Man, I don't know if I know or not, you know. I think probably, you know, like, again, I'm also not really motivated by money. Like, you know, obviously I want to be able to eat and have money and be successful. But to me, success is like waking up in the morning and being super stoked to go do whatever you're going to do. Right. And then that's primary. And then secondary, you try to figure out how to make money doing that. Right. Which is like, you know, and that's the dream, right? To be able to do what you love for a living, that you don't want what you're doing for a living to suddenly become a thing that you hate. Right. And that happens a lot with artists and musicians. That's why you have so many like depressed musicians, right? Because they got into music because it made them happy. And all of a sudden they're not happy. I felt like I had a unique perspective on that, having gone through that myself. And I think that like, I wanted to share that, you know, I want to share that with other artists and impact that them in a positive way. You know, and the best way I found to do that was by being their label partner. Right. And especially in today's new music world and the new business, like, how do you have a label relationship that is successful for everybody? Like I really like to create win-win situations. I don't, you know, a lot of people think winning is like getting the most they can and the other person, it's like a zero-sum game. I don't believe in that. I think that like everyone can win, right? And the way everyone wins is you have to be willing to leave chips on the table. And I think with Cobras, I left chips on the table. I could still be doing Cobras now if I wanted to, right? But I didn't want to. I wanted to like leave a legacy, leave chips on the table. And so then the question is, okay, well, why did I do shows this year and the Midtown thing and all that? So I think part of the issue was, you know, I stopped doing it. Another part that I talked about is just my personal life. I wanted to have kids, right? And I didn't want to have kids and then be an absent dad. I wanted to be there for my kids and be there as a girl, but I didn't want to be on tour 10 months out of the year. So that's a big part of it. But the only weird part is that my kids just didn't know me like that. They never saw me play a show. They never saw anything. So kind of two things happened at the same time, which is Mikey from MyChem called me. He's like, oh, hey, would you guys get back together to open some of these shows? We're getting back together. We'd love for you guys to get back together and do some of these shows with us.
Wow.
Fuck, dude. I mean, like, if there's an opportunity for my kids to see this play, it's in front of 15,000 people. You know, I would love for my kids to have that printed memory of their dad, not like wasted in front of 20 people at some shithole bar in Jacksonville. Oh, that's a cool one too. Maybe one day we'll have that member to them too. But yeah, so I took that opportunity. And at the same time, it was, you know, Fuel by Ramen was doing this whole like 25 years of Fuel by Ramen. And they were like doing special limited edition vinyl pressings of key albums. And so we took that opportunity with our pressing. I didn't just want it to be like this, like, oh, here the label's Printing Time Records. So we wanted to put a couple of unreleased songs on the vinyl. And then the label's like, well, we can't just put it on the vinyl, not put it on Spotify. And I'm like, fuck, if we put it on Spotify, we got to like make our thing. So we made it a little bit of a thing. We did a video for it. I thought it was kind of funny to keep it to like, you know, but again, these are B-sides. These are songs that weren't good enough to make the record, but we just wanted to share them. They're just sitting on hard drives, you know, for 10 years. So we put them out. I like the songs, but even in the video for the song, The Midtown thing was already in the works, but we hadn't talked about it yet. But if you see in the video, there's like a sign in the house, like a little poster that says Living Well is Best Revenge, which is like our Easter egg that Midtown was coming back. So
nice.
It was cool. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. I love an Easter egg and stuff. It's fucking brilliant.
But with that as well, I'm sure just looking back at these kind of memories and these moments, it was an interesting time having to, you know, putting that final nail in the coffin for Starship, starting back up Midtown and just seeing so much love and connection with those audiences as well, because it seemed that you had that bleed over a bit with you saying goodbye to one and reopening another.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I had said goodbye to Cobras before, you know. So I made an official announcement when I didn't want to like half-ass things or disappear and not say anything. And I just said in 2015, I just officially stopped Cobras, and I said I was going to start Tag before I even had an idea of what Tag was or what it was going to be like. My first employee was someone who DM'd me on Twitter. It was like, hey, do you guys need interns? And she was with me until her last week was last week. It was very sad. She got married. Wow. Now she's going up to the next stage in her life. But she was with me from like, she was still in college when she started working at Tag, you know? And I think that's like, the music is more than just the music. It's community. It's the people that you get to be on this ride with. And I think that as an artist, I just had an opportunity to just be on the ride with so many amazing people. And like, there's so many shady people in the business and so much just bullshit you have to deal with. I feel like I'm glad to like create a little like safe haven for people to have a sense of community.
Yeah, well, you mentioned then when you had no idea about starting Tag. What was the first step after leaving?
Literally announcing it. I moved to LA because like also at the time the whole music industry in New York had collapsed. Like all the studios closed down. You know, two things happened: real estate prices were going through the roof. The record business was in the shitter because of like Napster and stuff. So there was like all the studios had left New York. Labels were shutting down, and young people graduating high school or college couldn't afford to live in the city anymore. You know, so they were either going deeper into Bushwick, Brooklyn, or just moving to LA. So a lot of young creators were in LA. So I moved to LA to be around young artists, and I had no clients, no business, nothing. I just had a ton of people that I knew and nothing to call them about. So I literally started working on anything and everything that I could just to like be in the mix and get moving, you know? There's a saying that my dad used to say in Spanish, the path is made through walking. So I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to start walking and see where it leads. And at the beginning, you know, especially in LA, the first thing if you just want to be in the music business in LA, you can just work with writers and producers and you can just fucking set up sessions all day, right? And so that's what I was doing at the beginning, because it's like, I got to meet a lot of young artists, creatives, people, and just be in the mix of what's happening. But ultimately the writer and producer world, it's great. The songs being made are important, but your customers, quote unquote, are like artists or A&R people that you're trying to pitch songs to, right? And I'm really much more democratic. Like I love going straight to the people, you know, like you're an artist, you write the songs, the people tell you if it's good or bad. You don't need like an executive to tell you if your song is good or bad. So, you know, eventually I wanted to work with artists and I started working with artists. And what I found was that there was like a lot of young artists that either didn't want to be on a label or were like not big enough to be on a label, but still could have businesses just because of the way the music business was changing, right? You could put out music independently and make a living. You might not be rich, but you make a living, but it's not enough money for like a big label to work with. But that actually creates a vacuum where you need like smaller independents who can super serve smaller artists, but they're not these behemoth things with hundreds of employees that they got to support that they only can focus on hits, right? So that was kind of the impetus for me going from management to having a label. And then I had a great talk with Brett from Epitaph. He was talking to me and he was telling me how he was going to start taking a step back from like the daily operations of Epitaph. And he told me the person that he was going to promote, the one that I knew. And I was like, oh, why not like your GM or like, you know, your CFO? It wasn't a person who was already an executive. It was not an executive. And he's like, Gabe, what's the one thing you need to be able to run a record label? And I'm like, you know, I'm like starting a business. So I'm reading business books and I got my business head on. I'm like, great time management, great leadership. Like, you know, I'm giving him like all these business things. Like, no, dumbass, you got to know how to make records. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, if you want to run a record label, like all those other things, you can get a great person to like run your books or do any of the business stuff, right? But at the end of the day, running the record label, you got to know how to make records. And it inspired me. And he told me, he's like, you know, I think you can have a great label because you know how to make records. You've been in the studio. You can talk to artists about making records. And I'm like, huh, that's my value. Like, I can do a lot of other things pretty well. Like, you know, and I'm like, I work hard, all these things. And like, but ultimately, like, I spent so much of my time in the studio. And I've worked with these amazing producers. Like, I know how to make records. That's a great skill. So that I felt like, and then I just remembered, I'm like, yeah, a lot of the A&Rs that I worked, even though if they were great people, some of them just lacked the vocabulary to just be able to understand how actually making records works. Like, you know, what's happening inside the computer while you're making the record, all that stuff that I just knew how to do. I didn't realize I knew how to do it because, you know, you spend so much time doing something you never really study for. You're just like, oh, this is something I actually know how to do. So
yeah.
So I'm just like, okay, label, that sounds right, you know?
That must be nice now that you're at a stage in your career where you can offer that advice to people. I'm sure it's very refreshing almost every day when there's something new to have a look at, or there's an exciting artist, or there's a different kind of project, and it's not just the same old thing day in, day out.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, and I think the unique situation that I'm in is that because, yeah, I was in a band and we toured all that stuff, but I also had pop hits, right? And the pop game is like, it's kind of like its own thing separate from the music business, right? And there's like pop production, pop song structures, all these things. And so I know how to do that, but I also don't have to do that, right? I don't need a song to be a hit for people to like it, right? So it's almost like I have that knowledge that I can share with artists, but I'm also not trying to push it on, which happens to a lot of, you never sound to a major, right? You guys weren't at Bootstrap. But like a lot of fans, when they sign to majors, they feel like this encroachment of this like invisible hand of the business trying to push them into pop, right? And what happens with the pop thing is like, is it kind of like, it tries to package things in. It's like, okay, verse, chorus, verse, you know, like you have to put things into more formulaic because you're trying to appeal to the most amount of people. And so you need to follow, you need to present things maybe a little more simply sometimes to get people in the door, right? Which I get. Like I've had pop hits. So I've written songs. Like my first pop hit, Good Girls Go Bad, like we did 9 different versions of that song, right? To find the perfect version,
wow,
of it, right?
Oh wow.
How things fit with each other. Yeah. So it's like, so you know, and that kind of refinement process is something that you find more in that part of the business. You don't really, you know, when you're a band, you go record the record, you go into studio, like how it was with Midtown. You just go in, like, for better or for worse, that's what comes out. And the song evolves as you tour. As you tour, you find that, like, oh, I want to put this part here. I want to do this a little differently there. And, like, that's cool. The song keeps growing and evolving. In pop, you got to figure all that out before, you know?
Yeah.
You do spend a lot more time in the studio, less time on the road.
How was that going from Midtown in that kind of punk, emo, underground scene to then going to Cobra Starship and being re-cemented in pop culture around that time? You know, that led you to do a lot of those kind of TV things with MTV or the VMAs and whatnot. There's a lot of crossover into what was going on in trends and stuff like that. Was there any kind of moments where you had to like take a step back and be like, what the hell is like this going on? Or was it just kind of natural because it was something completely different than what you were doing before?
It was a choice. I remember, like, with Midtown, you know, so I'm 23 years old. Midtown had already been through, there's 3 major label systems. Midtown had already been through 2 of them. We did, you know, we were on Drive-Thru, which was bought by MCA, which was part of the Universal Interscope system. That's where it got into. Then after that, we did our 3rd album on Columbia, which is part of the Sony system, right? It didn't work on both those systems. So I'm 23 years old. I'm like, okay, I'm going back to school. Like, you know, I've had 2 shots, right? Even though my manager at the time says, you know, Gabe, a lot of artists like today got fucked, but you really got fucked. We signed right before both those companies had huge mergers and like executives were getting fired. So no one's trying to break Midtown. They're trying to sell as many Beyonce records as they can to keep their job. So even though I was like, okay, I've had 2 shots, like I'm good. I'm going to go back to school. And I had a friend that said to me, she's like, this was a friend of mine who worked in fashion, she worked at Diesel and she hooked up all these bands. You remember, guys, for a time there was like everybody was wearing Diesel?
Yeah.
It was because my friend Kelly, she just gave free shit to all the bands, right? That's why. So she went to a lot of shows, and she's like, yeah, if I go to a lot of shows, I'm telling you, the presidents of the companies, they don't come out to see these other bands. Like, they're coming out to see you because they think there's something special about you guys. And if you just get out of your own way, you could be successful. And I'm like, wait, are you saying I'm the problem? <You know? laughs> So I made a choice. Like, listen, by the time I was like 23, 24, I had already, you know, I'd been touring since I was 16. It's almost 10 years on the road by that time. And I'm like, okay, well, I could take all this information and knowledge that I've gained these years, and I could forget about it and go to school and just try to get like a real job, or I could like really try to give it a go and get out of my way. And that was a choice that I made. I said, I'm going to take this as far as I can go, not be precious about it, try to listen to other people. Like, I never listened to anybody. You can tell me nothing, you know, like I was just like, did what I wanted, argued with people all the time. I was very good at arguing. So like, I remember there's this one time, the cover of our third Midtown album, Forget What You Know, like it was a guy in his 70s in front of a television set. And they're like, how is this going to sell records? You know, like, what are you trying to say? And to me, it was art. Like, I'm trying to express an idea, right? Like I'm trying to express the idea of alienation. And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then the only picture of us was like on the inside, and our faces were all covered with tape, and we looked like demons. And they're like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, you know, this is not who we thought we signed. And I remember like all the executives, I guess they called my managers, and my manager was like, listen, we can't tell Gabe what to do. If you guys want to give it a shot, give it a shot. So I had like five executives, like, just trying to convince me to not do that. And eventually I just wore them out. They're just like, fuck this kid, you know? And so I just decided not to be like that anymore. That's really it. You know, I just said, okay, like, this is a music business, not the music art project. If I really want, it's a privilege that I have to be signed. Oh, we lost it. It's a privilege I have to be signed. It's a privilege I have to try and do this for a living. If I really want to be able to do this for a living, I have to figure out how to listen to what other people have to say. Like, this is other people's jobs too, right? So we all got to work together. And that took me like almost 10 years to figure that out. But when I figured it out, make it work.
Yeah, but it's really interesting to hear those differences, and especially on the pop culture side. And one thing I did want to bring up, you mentioned Girls Gone Bad. Obviously, that features the actress Lita Meester, who at the time was everywhere with Gossip Girl. How did all this happen? Because I wanted to talk about this for a reason, because you then ended up being on Gossip Girl in one scene on season 5, and that show was so big at that time. It was like literally everywhere, big part of pop culture. How did all that happen? I've wondered for years about this crossover.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, you know, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with pop culture. Like, sometimes I'm just like enjoying it and really paying attention to what's going on. I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, take the piss. Like, it's amazing. Other times I'm just like completely like have no idea what's going on in mainstream culture. And I'm just like in this completely alternative universe, in my own world, you know? But at the time of Cobras, I was just fully immersed in pop culture. Like, it was also a time when pop culture was interested in what we were doing, right? Not just Cobra Starship, but our whole world was like a part of pop culture. Like, you know, Fall Out Boy were monsters. Like, they were like on the cover of J14 and Teen Bop magazine. So it was kind of like, it was very natural that there was an overlap in those worlds. And the kids who were coming to our shows, they all loved Gossip Girl. I remember kids, like, I was on the road, and this was before there was like satellite TV on the buses, but everyone, you had a little DVD player in your bunks, and kids would like burn DVDs of Gossip Girl and bring it to me at meet and greets. It was like, hey, I got you the latest episode of Gossip Girl that you missed because you were playing a show last night, you know? So kids already knew that I loved Gossip Girl. I talked about it. It was like a fun thing. And then just by chance, and this is why I always say, like, success is when preparedness meets luck. You know, we were just prepared. We were like doing the right things. We already had done two albums. We already, we were touring our asses off. We had a big following. We were working on our third album. In the studio that we were working at, they're like, oh shit, we got to cancel your session tomorrow. We have one of the Gossip Girls coming in tomorrow to record. And I'm just like, what? What the fuck? She's making a record? Like, okay, I'll let you cancel my session, but you got to tell her that she's got to feature on one of our records. And I said it as a joke, and I already had Good Girls Go Bad. I had the record, so they could play it for her. I mean, I said it as a joke, but the producers at the studio played it for her. and she loved it, and it just happened very organically, you know? Because she was looking to break into music. She was working on music rights. So it just happened that it just, you know, and I think also the producers that we're working with, Sam and Sluggo, Sam Hollander, who just wrote a book that I haven't read yet, but I heard it's a great book. But at the time they did Us, Panic, Gym Class. They were working out of the same offices. The studios in the back of the offices of Crush, which was the management company that managed all of us. So it was very organic, and they blew up as producers because all our bands were blowing up, right? So everyone was calling them. So it's kind of natural that the Lady Meester's team called them. Like, oh, these are the hot new producers.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. I was going to expect to say that a major label came to you and was like, she's got to be on the song. But the fact, yeah, that's awesome.
Very, very organic. Shit only works when it's organic.
You talked about the nine different versions of it. Has anybody heard any of the other eight?
Oh, good question. I don't think so. Dude, it was so slow at the beginning. It was such a boring beat. Yeah, it's funny because it was our first co-write session. The writer on it was Cara DioGuardi, who's an amazing writer. I just saw her last week, and she just did Gale, you know, the ABCDFU song. She signed that artist.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow.
She's an incredible writer. And she's also like, you know, like, we're from New York. We got a lot of attitude, kind of trolls and funny. Like, it's not like we came to like writing such like, hey guys, we're in the pop. Like, we were still like fucking asshole New Yorkers, like talking shit, you know? And like, so you have to have a certain personality to find that endearing. Cara found it endearing as opposed to telling us to go fuck ourselves. Or maybe she told us to go fuck herself, then she found it endearing. But yeah, she just, you know, she's just like, okay, tell me what ideas you had. So I had like a whole list of like lyrics and song titles and stuff. And that was, I Make Good Girls Go Bad. It was one of them. And she just like, she's like, ooh, I like that. And just in her head, she goes, I'm making them go, girls. Like right there, like that. She just heard that melody in her head. Yeah. So
class.
Again, that's something I had never experienced before. You don't experience it. Like when you're like in the alternative or punk world, like, you don't have like someone come in and just like a professional hook person. Like, what is that? You know? So that's what she is, a professional hook person. She just came up with this amazing hook. So we have this like great hook. That was the starting point, this great lyric that I had and this great hook that she, melody hook that she had. And we really had to build a song around that. That's like a different way of songwriting, right? It's like you have, you're like, okay, like, hey, I have this piece of gold. I'm going to build around it. And we did. And like, it's funny, you know, nobody, the label didn't hear it. They're just like, what is the song? Like, so we went through so many versions of it to like really bring the song to what it was, you know?
That's mad. Yeah, I appreciate you talking about that because that is a song that still gets played massively in all the alternative clubs, especially over here.
Fuck yeah.
And speaking about that kind of infiltration of that alternative world in pop culture, one of my favorite ever memes is when you have Pete Wentz walking on the street and Bruno Mars is freaking out in the background. That's my favorite thing.
Well, Bruno co-wrote two songs on that same record. There's actually a song with Cara DioGuardi and Bruno Mars. Yeah, Bruno. First time I met Bruno, they were just writers. Bruno and Phil, which are the two guys in that photo that you talked about. Phil is Bruno's partner and Bruno Mars. Bruno Mars is two people. People don't know that. So
he's Mars. Yeah. He's Mars. Bruno's Bruno. Phil's Mars. Nice.
The other guy's name is Phil, and they write everything together. And they came in, and they basically like pitched us an idea. And personally, just came in, like sang it, and we're like, "Wow, it's great!" And it was a song called "Living in the Sky with Diamonds" on the same album. And then I had a Hot Mess, which I just had this great chorus, but the verses weren't right. So Bruno wrote the verses for that song.
Well, I never fucking hell. We are learning today.
And Cara helped me with the bridge of that also. Yeah.
Well, wow. I never.
See, I love all this random connection
it's
between
the best,
people.
It's the best bits, yeah.
It also shows how small the industry is. Like, I don't think people very understand. Looking back at that time, though, is there any piece of clothing or swag or anything like that from Cobra Starship which you look back or you find in closets or wherever now and you're like, can't get away with that today, or that's absurdly colorful.
Well, obviously the purple hoodie. I think the purple hoodie still holds today, you know. So But I think the black and white checkered pants, really skin tight black and white checkered pants, I don't think anyone can get away with those today.
No. No.
Yeah, yeah, I think to be honest, yeah, you were one of few who could at that time.
Yeah. I to be honest with you, I don't even think I got away with it then.
Yeah. Well, no, you did. You did. But yeah, there was a small window of about 365 days where those pants are acceptable. And yeah, you found those days and everybody else didn't. Yeah.
2010s was weird fashion. Definitely.
Very much so.
Speaking of Pete Wentz, though, I have to ask you for this story because this is another thing I've always wanted to talk to you about, is when, you know, you're just out there presenting the VMAs and then all of a sudden he has a t-shirt on with your actual phone number. What was that actually like for you? Amazing prank, but must have been very hard on you afterwards.
And fucking annoying. Messages. It's got to be fucking annoying. It's not beating around the bush.
That was also my first time ever presenting an award, right? So Pete had done it a bunch of times already. So it was like whatever. He was just scooping around. He's like, I'm gonna prank my friend. I'm already nervous up there. You know, Pete, first he's taking his clothes off. I'm like, what's going on, bro? I didn't understand what he's doing. And he's in front of me, so I can't see his shirt. So I gotta look at him. I'm like, ah, oh, geez, Pete, what the fuck? You know? He really got me in that. I had no idea. But, you know, I just had to change my number. I had already had to change my number a couple of times since then. So it was peak stardom era. So craziness.
Yeah. How long after? I'm guessing you changed your number like the next day, because that night must have been fucking nuts.
I just turned my phone off and that was it. Yeah.
Fucking Pete.
Changed my number. Yeah. I still remember that number. 917-400-0979. That was a good number.
Did you ever get him back with any little other pranks that maybe people don't know about? Or
I tell you what you could do. You could give out his number right now.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Yeah. He had to get my fucking face tattooed on his body forever. So I think that was pretty good.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the last couple of years with Midtown in particular as well, how was it like for you stepping back on the stage in front of all those people again, especially playing songs you hadn't performed in such a long time? I mean, those My Chem shows were so special all around the world. People have really talked about it a lot, but I'm sure kind of opening for them, getting to do it and your kids seeing you as well must have felt like a really full circle, wholesome moment in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like a high school reunion in a way. You know, the Midtown guys, I grew up with those guys even before we were in Midtown. We started Midtown when we were our first year in college. And but before that, when we were in high school, we were all in different bands that played shows together. That's how we all knew each other. So it definitely felt like very wholesome. You know, everyone has kids now. I'm the only lunatic still in the music business. So they're like normal dads. And it's just like everyone's just doing it because they love it. There's no other reason to do it. There's no agenda. There's no like trying to turn this into something. So it's very pure and it's really just about the music. And, you know, with the My Chem shows, we actually played two shows before starting the My Chem run, which I think was crucial because I think if we would have started with the My Chem cold, it would have been a little nerve wracking, you know, just because it's like they're My Chem fans. They don't know who Midtown is. So we had to win them over in a way, right? And we hadn't played in, you know, 15 years or whatever it is, right? We played like a small club in Chicago with the Academy A's, and the next day we played at Riot Fest. And at Riot Fest, you know, we played right after Jimmy World was finishing. And Jimmy World had a huge crowd, and we were like on a different stage, and we're like, oh shit, there's gonna be no one to see us. And like literally 5 minutes before Jimmy World was ending, it like poured in, like 8,000 people came out. And I was like shaking. I'm like, holy fuck. You know, I fucked up a couple times at the beginning of the set because I was nervous. But then it was just like so like gratifying to see all these people. I mean, Midtown never played shows that big when we were together. So it's like the music kind of lived on after we were gone. All these new fans and old fans were singing along. And I'm like, oh shit, this is sick. So then I felt confident to do the My Chem shows. And then we played two headline shows in our hometown in Jersey. Again, we never sold out one of those venues. We played two nights at the same venue. We never sold out one night at that venue, 2,000 capacity venue. And like, you know, we sold 5,000 tickets in 24 hours. So it was just like, wow. So it was very like, to me, honestly, that's the best part of it. The part that you can just create something and it still means something to somebody 20 years later is unbelievable.
But there seems to be such a love for that music from 20 years ago as well. I know a lot of people kind of talk about nostalgia and that's its own kind of thing. But especially with Midtown and all the bands you used to play with around that time, it seems that there's so much more love and appreciation if you ever do something again. Have you noticed that scene has just gotten a lot more different eyes from the generations who didn't get to check out the first time?
100%. Like, I can even tell, like, the artists that I'm signing who are these young artists, teenagers, 17 years old, 18 years old, they love that music. You know, I have one artist who their favorite band is AFI, and they know everything about AFI. Yeah. So I think that's great. I think it's cool. I think what it really says is, like, people are not consuming what's being offered to them in mainstream culture, and they're looking for alternatives. And it's there. And I think it's a great time. You know, I think that, you know, when Cobra Starship started, it was kind of like the beginning of the end of that world. You know, we kind of survived when the scene died in a way, right? And because we had electronic elements. So we were able to, like, kind of really be in the pop world and be in 2012. There was no scene in 2012. So it's great that 10 years later, it's like all anyone's talking about, you know? So I'm excited by that. I feel like we're right at the beginning of it, and I'm excited to be here for it.
Nice. As the surely an offer has come in from When We Were Young Festival for a Cobra Starship appearance. Is there any a chance of that?
I didn't get an offer.
What? Surely. What? Fucking hell. Oh, When We Were Young. I know you listen every week. They don't. But fucking what? Sort that out. That's, yeah. But would you be something that you would consider? Would you ever consider doing it?
I'm not opposed to it. I think if we ever do Cobras, it just has to be the right thing for the right reason. You know, I think with Midtown, like, everyone's head was in the right place. You know, I don't think I'd really want to do Cobras without the original lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was Mike Cam, and you know. The funny thing with the Mike Kemp thing is Mikey heard, we were already talking about it. Mikey heard about it. So that's why he called me. So we had already been like on that page, but you know, I'm open to it. Alex, I broke my finger during the Midtown tour, so I couldn't play a couple of shows, and Alex from Cobras ended up playing bass, which is like a really like world colliding, kind of moment. But yeah, I think with Cobras, you know, if everyone wants to do it, I'm not opposed to it. But I'm also, I'm very much about like, no, it's not even that. I'm just very much about like, I'm just trying to just like flow in the way the universe wants to go. You know, so if the universe wants it, I'm not going to push back on it.
Yeah. Yeah. From everything you said, it does seem when things are natural, that's when you're most excited. Midtown doing these shows, of course, people comment straight away about you wanting do more tours. You probably get come to Brazil as the running gag.
Everyone
gets. But then the next thing people ask for is new music. And what I love is you've gone full 360 with it. And instead of writing new stuff, you're putting out an EP called We're Too Old to Write New Songs. So here's some old songs we didn't write.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well done.
It all stemmed from conversations like this where everyone's like, okay, when's any music? When do everyone want new music? And I'm like, but do you really want new music? You know? And and it's like people like the old songs, but they want to hear some of the town stuff. So I just felt, I also, maybe it's just me being a coward. I don't know, but I've written 7 albums between Cobras and Midtown. That's a lot of fucking music that I've released, you know, plus all the songs that didn't make it. And I think, you know, I think the amazing thing about a song is that it documents the mind of the artist at that moment in time. And Midtown documented a certain part of my life that I'm just not in right now. So I feel like if I, well, you know, it leaves me only 2 options. Either I'm honest and write songs for where I am right now, which is completely off brand to Midtown, you know, we're talking about like changing diapers and shit, or
punk rock diaper changing. Surely there's something there. There's got to be something there.
Yeah. Or I try to go back to the place I was in my early 20s, which just to me feels inauthentic, right? Like maybe I could get back there and fake it, but it's just like, I'm not there. So why do that? So I thought it would be a good opportunity to at least just like, you know, use a release as a love letter to some of our favorite songs, you know, shine a light on some artists that maybe didn't get their due. And also just like share with people our inspiration. So that was kind of the impetus for doing it this way.
Such a good idea and such a great name. Well done. You win. Yeah.
Thank you.
You win EP names.
Must have been fun revisiting those songs that you've grown up with as well and thinking, oh, how would we have done this? Or how do we want to present it to people who maybe they've never heard these bands or these songs before, and you get into shine, as you said, a new light on it.
Yeah, it's really fun. The really fun part is, you know, these are records that came out, the one that's out now and the one that's coming out on Friday are records that from the 90s, right? So like you know, genius lyrics, you know, you can't just look up the lyrics if you don't have them. So it's funny because when I went to sing it, there was definitely words that I thought were the lyrics that were not the words. Yeah. I looked it up on Genius. So, but I sang it the wrong way anyway. So if anybody catches that, you know, they can yell at me on Twitter about it.
One of those bands is Lagwagon. I know that was a huge influence, especially when like in your late teens. Is it true that you once snuck backstage at a festival to do a fake interview with the band?
Yes, it wasn't a festival. It was at Coney Island High, a club in New York. I literally snuck downstairs to the backstage room. I'm like, hey, I have a zine. I work for so-and-so zine. I don't even know what zine I said. Can I interview you, Joey? And he's like, yeah, after the show, come to the van. So I interviewed Joey. I asked him like a bunch of like, I think he told me like, wow, these are really great questions. And it was just like questions that I just generally wanted to know about what it's like to be in a band. This was before I was an artist, you know, like I was just like, wow, I love music. Can I do this for a living? I'm like 14 years old, 15 years old. And I think the stuff that he told me just like changed my life. He told me one thing. He goes, you know, I was never like a great singer, a great musician, but I just loved this. And I just would keep banging it out until something good came out. And I think that's always just been my attitude to songwriting. Like, you know, I think when I was really young, like a little kid, like I always liked rock and roll. Like I remember loving Guns N' Roses when I was young. And then Nirvana came out and I'm like, oh, I can do this. It's not like a big production with big hair. Like, you know, when you see like fucking metal from the 80s, it's not like you don't look at it and feel like, wow, this is inspiring for me to want to be a part of or try to do. It's like you feel like you're watching like a fucking Broadway production or something. Like you're like, oh, this is cool. This is like some grandiose thing that requires this institution behind it. That's cool that it's made. I have no idea how it gets made or who did it or what, but it's cool. When you saw Nirvana, you're like, oh, these are dudes playing in their garage. I can play in the garage with my friend. And I think that was the beginning of like the punk rock revolution was this like idea of like a garage band from Seattle. You know, it's like literally it could be your life, right? So this is like when I went backstage live when I was like 1995, only like 4 years after Nirvana happened, right? So it was like in the shadows of that I'm like, oh, here's some bands that are actually doing it. What's it like? And yeah, that was the beginning of it.
It's awesome to hear that stuck with you and helped so much as well. Is there any other moments throughout your career or just maybe like the early days where you got yourself into situations where you thought, wow, I can't actually believe like this is happening, or you had to like second guess yourself, take a step back and let it all sink in?
I think going to Japan was crazy. Like, and this is a weird thing. Midtown was fucking massive in Japan for some reason. And like we had people at the airport. Like it was like, you know, before I had any success with Cobras, we would go to Japan and we were like celebrities, people following us around the street, like crazy shit. And I'm just like, oh, Japanese fans are very enthusiastic, you know? Fast forward, you know, 4 years later, I go back with Cobras, and Cobras was not big in Japan. And we just got there just like crickets. And I'm like, oh, the account was really big here. Like, there's something special about Mr. Japan. So even to this day, I went there a couple times and I saw like older fans like, oh my God, you're from Midtown. Like, they don't know Corbin Starship in Japan, they know Midtown. So I thought that was like a very weird, super weird.
That's very strange.
Yeah. Someone explained to me the early, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, like punk rock wasn't happening nationally in Japan. So they were importing all of it. And then all of a sudden they had a lot of homegrown acts, and so those acts were the ones that kids were listening to. So they stopped importing bands like Cobra Starship and Fall Out Boy as much as like they were thirsty for it in the early 2000s. One of the dudes that was on Drive Through with me, I think he was in a band called Alistair, he ended up moving to Japan and became like a famous musician in Japan. He speaks perfect Japanese. I can't remember his name.
Wow. Yeah. That's mad.
Yeah, it's crazy how different territories can pick up different things and it can just work out like that. I've always found that kind of mad how the stars align with those kind of things.
Did you ever do Brazil with Midtown?
I did. Well, no, I did Brazil with Cobra Starship.
Okay. How was that?
Well, the funny thing is everyone says come to Brazil. Cobra Starship was massive in Brazil. We were massive all throughout South America. Oh, I remember one thing that's crazy. My 30th birthday, I'm on vacation. This is Good Girls Go Bad just come out. So we're on our third album. I take a birthday vacation with my girlfriend to Mexico. And I'm like, she's sleeping. I'm watching MTV in the hotel in Mexico. And they're like talking about, they're doing like the countdown show. And they're like, this week's number one comes from a band from New York City, blah, blah, blah. Starts talking. I'm like, what? And it's fucking Cobra Starship. Number one. I'm like, what the fuck? On MTV number one, like, and I think Cobra Starship, because like, you know, I had some songs in Spanish. Like, I really wanted to do it because I was born in Uruguay in South America. So I really wanted Cobra Starship to have influences, also rhythmic influences from that. So I included that in there. I spoke more Spanish. I think like it appealed to that. It was big in Mexico, huge in Brazil. Apparently, like the whole neon thing, like influenced the whole like swath of bands in Brazil. And then at the end of Cobra Starship, the last tour we did was we opened for Justin Bieber in South America. So we were playing stadiums all over South America, like 50, I think we played 85,000 people in Chile. But yeah, it was crazy. South America was incredible for us. And I think like a moment for me was like being in Buenos Aires, because I'm from Uruguay. Buenos Aires is like, Uruguay is kind of like the New Jersey to Buenos Aires's New York, if that makes sense, right? So it's like right across the river, like people go to Buenos Aires for shows all the time. And like all my family and people and friends from Uruguay are all at this big show watching me open for Justin Bieber. You know, they're like, because I think people are just like, they don't have a conception of it in like a small country. Like, well, you do music for a living? Like, to them, music is the guy on the corner, like busking, right? Show, or like the guy at the restaurant. So that was cool. Yeah, that blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, I can imagine.
you were the king of Rio for a while. I'm surprised they haven't got a big statue of you on a mountain just doing big arms.
Oh yeah, there was a big billboard we played some Rio festival, and there's like a big billboard with my face on it. I'm just walking down the street. I'm like, holy shit. It's weird.
Oh wow. Well, I've absolutely love these stories, Gabe. Just as we start to wind down, because we know you're a very busy man, we appreciate you taking the time for all this. You've talked very openly and passionately about Midtown and everything in between. Obviously, this new covers EP is coming out May 26th, but is there kind of a plan with the band now? Or as you said, is it just kind of focusing on what seems natural? Do you think you do more tours? Are you not kind of pushing it? Is it just kind of see what offers coming? I mean, how are you treating Midtown and just being the musician side of your brain at the moment?
I think, you know, I like this idea of these tributes that we're doing to our favorite songs. We're doing four right now. You know, I'm not opposed to doing more. I think for if we do more, maybe we'll have like our fans kind of decide what songs they want to hear from us. And I also like the high school reunion vibe of it. Like, I'd love to do like a once a year New Jersey hometown show, and just for our family and friends, and like have our kids come. Like, that to me would be sick. Yeah.
Nice.
Apart from that, I don't really have big ambitions for Midtown. Tag Records, on the other hand, is going to be fucking huge.
Yeah, well, yeah. Please fire away. Who are you looking after? Who should we check out? Who's the next big thing? Who's going to be the next king of Rio?
We sign our new signings. Jules is Dead and Sophie Powers, both from Toronto. They both make different kinds of music. Sophie Powers, it's funny. Sophie Powers is kind of like more like Cobra Starship, than this electronic kind of like fuck you music. And Jules is Dead does, it's like, they're the ones that love AFI, you know, so much darker, nice, aggressive rock music. And then we signed this band out of Argentina too, called Pacifica, that we're about to launch, that are just, they sing all in English, amazing musician. Yeah. And people are just excited about them. Like all of these artists, even before releasing music officially, we've just built great followings. And, you know, I just take like what I've learned about, you know, just building community and having a relationship with your fans and just doing it all on the internet.
And with all that, is there one piece of advice you would give either people trying to get into music or just creative and trying to bet on themselves in this long process of not giving up and trying to push through everything?
Yes. Another question I just was asked, and I think if I had to sum it up for one word, it would just be pause, right? With everything you do, like people, especially in today's world, because you can do things fast. You can record a song right now on your computer and put it up tonight, right? Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should. Like if you pause, like you write a song, pause, come back to it next week with fresh ears, right? You wanna get into a fight online, pause and just think about it. You know, like you don't have to always be putting out content, putting out new stuff. Like if you look at the artists who are the biggest, they take long breaks, right? You can't be missed if you don't go away. You have to really take the time. If you want to last, don't burn yourself out. That's really important. Like what's gonna give you success is your mental state. You know, your mental state is the most important. There's no joy in making money if you're not enjoying it. You know, success comes from having staying power, and having staying power comes from not burning yourself out and having a good mental state, right? So like, I think mental health is like a big aspect of everything that I try to do with my artists. Having been a fuck up myself for so long, you know?
Hey, we can all attest to that. We can all attest. We've all had our own, share, and we talk about mental health on this a lot. So yeah, a great last few words. But Gabe, thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Awesome.
Honestly, it means so much. Wanted to speak to you about these kind of things for so long. So I really do appreciate you taking the time. Excited for this new EP. And yeah, if you're ever in the UK for anything, or you want to bring Midtown to a British festival, please do. And we'd love to do this in the flesh.
We'd love that. Morgan, Sean, thank you guys both so much. Appreciate it. Thank you guys. Have a great day.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
Yes!
Woo! That was Gabriel, supporter of Midtown, Cobra Starship, and Tag Artist Management. What a fantastic chat. Never thought it would happen. And here we are.
I was ecstatic about it, literally. I remember seeing cover Starship stuff all over Kerrang and SCUS TV as a kid, and I had so many friends who had those kind of neon shirts because of Good Girls Go Bad. It's still a hit song that gets played everywhere, all alternative nightclubs here in the UK. And yeah, it's just nice to pick his brain about so many stuff. Hopefully we'll get some of those Midtown shows over here, this side of the pond, eventually. Surprised they haven't been booked for any summer festivals, but he is a very, very busy, busy man, looking after other artists.
Yeah, you would have thought like somebody like Slam Dunk would have got in touch with them. They would have been perfect for that. But I imagine he'd probably go check with Alid. But yeah, it was a good, fantastic chat. It was nice to see Gabe chilled out in his New York office. What a mad career. What mad adventures he's been on and done. And yeah, Midtown, pop punk, punk to Cobra Starship, uber pop to now band management. And yeah, don't forget to check out some of the bands that he mentioned as well, that he's looking after, because no doubt they will be radical, as the Americans say, which is American for real good.
I'm looking forward to that one artist he said is influenced by AFI, because we love some fucking AFI on here. But remember, Midtown will be releasing that wonderfully titled covers EP. We're too old to write new songs, so here's some old songs we didn't write. May 26th. Go and pre-order it now. Links to their website and social media. You can check out those two current tracks from the release, from Lad the Wagon covers and a Pavement track as well. That's available right now. Speaking of things and people doing stuff and, you know, ongoings in the world, worst segue I've fucking ever done. But if you follow us on our social media pages at Sappening Pods on Twitter and Instagram, you would have seen this week that we have announced another live podcast for this summer.
Ah, nice. Yes, we are doing 2000 Trees Festival. We are performing on one morning. I want to say it's the Saturday. Yes,
the Saturday, July 8th on the Word stage. We're going to be telling some bad jokes, talking to people, and having a laugh in the flesh.
You'll be telling bad jokes.
Yeah, you'll be telling good ones, and I'll be ruining it with a pun and then making everyone boo. It's a lovely time. It's a lovely time. If you're in the UK, come down to 2000 Trees Festival in July and we can have a laugh.
Yeah, it's like a Sappening pantomime, it is.
Oh, no, it's not. He's behind you.
Give us a follow on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, at Sappening Pod. And if you've enjoyed this, why the fuck would you enjoy it after what he's just done there? Anyway, but yeah, if you want to support me, not him anymore, go to patreon.com/Sappening and check it out. There's a whole load of different tiers and stuff for you to check out. And yeah, you can meet some of your new best friends and get some people to come with you to 2000 Trees, because I know a bunch of different people from the group are going. And if it's anything like last year, we'll have a big meetup and we'll all hang out for a bit. So yes, that's patreon.com/Sappening. Also, thank you very much to James and everybody at 2000 Trees for inviting us back. I cannot wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a good laugh. If you head over to our Patreon, there's loads of gig guides happening over there as well, where people are posting that they're going to certain shows. Not just in the UK, there's people from Australia, America, Germany. Man. It's literally crazy. So if you listen to this and you want new people, new friends to hang out with, go to festivals, go to gigs, patreon.com/Sappening. Embrace yourself with the community and have a lovely, lovely time. If you head to the description of this episode, there's loads of names there that we need to thank. But as always, Sean is going to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Sappening Podcast Patreon community. Those are the champions with the top tiers.
Nice. Thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwewe, Janelle Caston, Paul R. Swank, Ishfield. Ha ha ha, see what we've done. Thank you very much. Tony Michael, Scarlett Charlton, Kelly Irwin, Dilly Grimwood, Natasha Morris, Nathan Croshaw, Mitch Perry, Emma Barber, Sammy G, Kat Bess, and Dana Lazova, Jenny Robson, Scott Jones, Murray Grimwood, Amy Dawson, Amy Louise, Stuart McNaught, Ellen Southfield, Stephen Aston, Caroline Robinson, Kate Puttock, Martina McManus, Louis Cook, Danny Eaton, Carl Pendlebury, Jenny Munster, James McNaught, John and Emma, Emily Perry, Jason Heredia, M. Evans Roberts, Craig Harris, Sean Foynes, Khalil Akeen, Adam King of the Goss Parslow, Ollie Amesbury, Josh, did you hear about the giant with diarrhea? It's all over town crisp. Thank you very much, Alice Wood, Rhys Bowling, Cal David Smith, and Connor Lewins. Thank you very much to all of those people and everybody, like Morgan said, that's mentioned in the description. If it wasn't for you guys, this would not be possible. So thank you very much. We love you very, very much. Stay safe.
Wise words.
Thank you. And, that's it then, I suppose. Yeah, we just got the end. Jesus, I forgot how the ends of these work.
Sapnin!
Oh, lady.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.